Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor super fan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, fear not, text page. We'll get to the Rockets. Not to change the subject, did you see Jalen Green's dunk last night? Disgusting. Yeah, we'll get to the Rockets in the next segment. That was a nice win.
Disgusting in a good way.
In a good way, yeah. The kind when they say, when the kids say it's sick. It's a good sick. It's a disgusting. But let's get into this.
Or bad.
Or bad.
Bad at one
for
point
us,
in life.
Back in the day, yeah. All right, so yesterday, we were looking at some. Luther Burden III.
Yeah,
his scouting report from Bob McGinn or Bob not his not Bob McGinn scout Bob McGinn, former writer for the Milwaukee Sentinel Journal back in the day. He is really good at cobbling together opinions of anonymous scouts. He's really good at getting people to talk anonymously about future NFL players.
Going back a long time. So I went back to, I think 2014 was as long back as I went, Sean. And I found some choice anonymous scout quotes from Bob McGinn through a combination of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, The Athletic, and now Tyler Dunn's website, which is, what's it called?
GoLongTD.com.
GoLongTD.com. I renewed my subscription so I could get some of these. So I'm going to start off. Let's start you off good. Let's get you some confidence built.
Okay, lay out what we're doing here. Yeah.
These are all either former or current Texans players, most of whom were drafted by the Texans, but one or two of which were not drafted by the Texans, but were prominent players with the Texans.
Okay, okay.
I'll tell you what position they played.
Okay. Yeah, one hint helps. Okay, good.
Yeah, I'll give you one hint, and I'll start you off pretty easy.
Okay,
I think.
Okay,
I don't know.
We'll see. We'll see.
A 4.64 corner. His 40 time. That's hard to get over. He's one of those guys that knows he can't run, so he just grabs people. He gets downfield. He grabs all the time. More of a number three type zone underneath man talent. I like him, but that was a disaster. I wouldn't draft him until the fourth or fifth round. He's a good player too.
Wow. Okay. The tell in this one to me, if I get it right, is the 4.64 40 for a cornerback.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say this is Kamari Lassiter last year.
You got it.
I got it. Okay, yeah.
I'll give you a ding myself, too.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Well,
to follow it up, one of the positive quotes about Kamari Lassiter.
Love
that kid, yet you'll say, well, he only ran this. He never gave up a touchdown. All the guy does is play football. He's going second round, slam dunk. He was 100% in the first round before he ran that 40.
I think it's an overestimation or maybe hyperbole to say this, but at least within the ecosystem of the Texans, I kind of think Kamari Lassiter has done to 40 times what C.J. Stroud did to the S2 test, where at certain positions, where I'm like, okay, if they draft a corner who ran a 4.6 40 again, as long as his film looks like Kamari Lassiter's film, cool. I mean, in a way, that was a glitch in the matrix that allowed the Texans to get Kamari. That's the only reason he fell to 42.
The S2 test really took a beating when it was almost hard to find some of the negative quotes about C.J. Stroud that weren't about his S2 cognition test.
Yeah.
And all of like the way people were misinterpreting it is like it's an IQ test or something, which it's not.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Good job, Sean. Thanks.
Good job. Yeah. One for one. Okay. So, and I'll tell you if they're a player who was drafted or not drafted by the Texans.
That's the only hint I need. That's the only hint. I don't know if it's the only hint I need, but that's the only
position.
One I want. Yeah.
In the position.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So this is a defensive back that was drafted by the Texans.
Okay.
Plays a lot of linebacker, but has good pedal and runs with backs and tight ends. Very athletic in his hip turn and coverage. A lot of people are going to go into taller slots that can run the seam and try to get matchups. He could handle that. I can't say he's going to be great against Cole Beasley. He will knock your socks off, always around the ball, captain and great leader.
Okay, and this is a player who was drafted by the Texans, you said?
Yes.
That is Jalen Petrie.
Yes, good job. Okay. Yeah. Good job.
Thank you, yeah. The last part, boy, the linebacker thing set me in a brain space where I was thinking about a bigger player than Petrie.
Yeah.
But then I remembered he hits the captain at the end was the giveaway for me.
A really good synopsis of what he actually was.
Yes.
And a lot of Baylor people were saying, why don't you use him like they did at Baylor, where he's kind of a linebacker, kind of a slot. And then lo and behold, that ends up being his best deal. He's a nickel linebacker.
Yeah.
He's somewhere between a linebacker and a defensive back.
This is fun. I'm 2 for 2. All right, let's go.
And I said, instead of Cole Beasley, if they had said Davante Adams, it would have been perfect.
Oh.
Like, you don't want him. The same thing we were saying during training camp. Like, all right, it's cool what they're doing with him, but they can't have him just, like, isolated against a guy like Davante Adams, right?
Covering people, yeah. All right, let's keep going.
Okay, a draft pick by the Texans, who was an offensive lineman.
Okay.
I'm going to omit a couple of the school names here.
Okay, yeah.
So, he's a good athlete and has nice feet. They played a bigger school who had the third best D-line in the nation.
Okay.
He just wasn't very strong. I would certainly draft the guy in the fourth. I'd really like to work with him, but I don't understand why at a smaller school he's playing the right tackle and not left tackle.
Okay, well, he's a smaller school. I'm trying to think. Without dragging it out here and trying to go through every depth chart since 2014, I'm going to go with what I think is the obvious one and say that's Titus Howard.
Yes.
All right, good Titus job. Howard. Good, yes.
That was a tough one because of the small school part.
Yeah, that made it easier. Who was the school you omitted that he played against?
Auburn.
Okay, yeah. That makes sense.
That was a tougher one. Let's see.
Yeah, pick a tough one for me.
This is a draft.
You want to stop giving me hints? If you want to, like, just tell me if they
just
were...
Just not even tell you at all?
Let's draft it by the... Just tell me whether or not they were drafted by the Texans. Let that be the one hint.
Okay, I'll tell you whether or not they were drafted by the Texans.
Yeah.
This one will be interesting. Okay. He could be gone by a certain pick based on need.
Okay.
Somebody's got to go, and if it's not going to be anybody, it's probably going to be him because he's the most steady. I'd really have a hard time taking any defensive back in the first round. Okay. Very good technique, awareness, instinct, and ball skills, all that good stuff. But he's not a burner, and he's thin. Just a good, solid all-around corner.
Okay, well, that's is that Kalen Bullock?
No! Ha! Sing this demo! Yeah.
I got caught up in his skinny little chicken legs. He's
Kevin Johnson.
Oh!
Yeah. Yeah.
And you
okay,
said,
good.
And you said corner, and then I'm thinking to myself, well, they probably played Kalen Bullock at a little bit of corner at USC at some point.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. Okay. I was going to, if I had said defensive back, I mean, obviously you still wouldn't have gotten it.
You said defensive back.
I know. Oh, I did. Okay. Okay,
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Let's see. Okay. I think this is medium toughness.
Okay.
I put this at a 5.
Okay. I'm still having fun, by the way. I'm enjoying
this. This is a Texans draft pick.
Okay.
Quick feet in pass set. Just average strength and sustain in the run game. More raw, probably comes in as a swing tackle who is putting it together. He'll be a starter at the end of the day.
Okay, they haven't drafted many tackles. Is it Blake Fisher?
Yeah, that's
it. Blake Fisher, okay.
I should have said offensive, like a lineman instead of tackle.
Yeah, whatever you want to do, whatever liberties you want to take with the scouting report to make it more difficult without denigrating the integrity of it, that is fine.
No, I'm not opposed to you getting almost all of them correct.
Yeah.
Because if there's one thing I know about taking tests online, I'm a sucker for the ones where it's really easy.
Yeah.
Where they're like, especially if they do something like 99% of people couldn't score a 90 on this test, and you get it, and you're like, oh, I'm so smart.
Yeah.
I'm so smart. Yeah. And you realize, oh, they gamed me. And then all of a sudden you're buying insurance from that company. One of the positive reports about Blake Fisher, he's got the least play strength of the top guys, particularly in his lower body. That said, he's light on his feet, flexible. You put him at guard, he's got elite pass pro skills. He's more raw, but his physical upside is at least more than Fuaga's. Talent-wise, he should be a left tackle, and Alt should be the right tackle.
That's one of the things I'm anxious next week, Seth. We're going to have Nick Caserio on. We should mention this. We're going to have him on a week from tomorrow. On Thursday, April the 3rd. After the league meetings are next week, he gets back from that. We're going to have him on right after that. That is one player's offseason who I am anxious to hear how it's going. In the weight room, putting some bulk on. Like if Blake Fisher's able to bulk up to where he addresses what's in that scouting report and what we saw in film last year, I think there's a good chance he's the starting right tackle for this team this year. He's got a good fighting shot at it. All right, do you have any more here?
Okay. No, I've got 27 more.
We're going to play this all week. 8 o'clock tomorrow. Guess what we're doing. Yeah.
This is a tough one. Okay. Texans draft pick. Anonymous scout.
Yeah.
He's immature. That shows up in his film, too. When he gets hard coaching from guys that make him grow up and be a man, it'll show up on the field as well. You'll see some athletic ability, nimble, quick, but a non-explosive guy. He just gets beat up inside. I don't think he's very tough or competitive, just a flash gap-penetrating guy.
Okay, so this is somebody on the defensive side of the ball. Is that what you said? Okay, so this is somebody, it sounds like, who plays up front on the defensive side of the ball. And this is somebody who was drafted by the Texans? Drafted by the Texans along the defensive line. Oh, boy. I don't know. Lewis Nix.
Buzzer. That's a good guess. It's a good guess. Plus, I planted that seed in your mind before the show.
If you hadn't planted that seed, I would have had nobody.
This was the guy who was supposed to be an easy slam dunk, really good replacement caliber player for DeAndre Hopkins for years to come. Ross Blacklock. Remember when the Texans PR put out that report everybody's talking about how they only got a second round pick, but they're going to draft a guy with that second round pick who's going to be awesome for years and years and years.
Right. Yeah. Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
What I forgot? One of the positives about him, that his dad was a Harlem Globetrotter, said one scout.
Really?
Great home life. Best football is ahead of him. He's got feet, eyes, strength to push the pocket. He can two-gap, understands how to use his hands, has a feel for the game, has quickness and burst. All his is upside. I do see him as a first-rounder, according to one anonymous scout.
Oh, boy. That did not work out for that anonymous scout. That assessment did not work
out. Okay, this is a guy who was not drafted by the Texans but was a prominent player for the Texans, and I'm just doing this out of pettiness. Good athlete with strong hands, a little bit of a finesse guy. They, at his school, are almost like the Oregon teams now. They're really not physical players. He doesn't play with the same edge as another prospect, and that's why I prefer the other guy. This guy is technically very good and is a nice athlete, but you want to see that nasty streak.
Yeah. I'm going to say Brandon Cooks.
Laramie Tunsil, as I said in the actual report.
You'd be a horrible game show host.
A finesse guy, you want to see that nasty streak. Yeah, that's the thing that's not swarm. That ended up being completely true. Yeah. Laramie Tunsil is a finesse player. He's not a nasty dude at all.
That's really interesting. Now, and they get more interesting to me, Seth. The ones that you did get more interesting to me the longer ago the player was drafted. Because you're right. Like, that's something. That scouting report was from before Laramie Tunsil was even picked. And that's proven to be true over the course of 9 years. Like, he's never addressed that. He's always still been. That's something that, I don't know, maybe that's, to me, that feels like stuff that's, like, really fixable. Like, just play harder. But to Ted Johnson's point, if they don't bite his puppies, they don't bite his dogs sometimes.
It has always seemed to me like a guy who just finished his doctoral thesis in advanced comparative literature, and you plunk him down on an oil rig that, like, do you expect me to wear that? I don't think so.
Those are awfully baggy around the calves, okay?
The cleanliness around here is not up to my standards. Oh, I'll just say that much.
Dude.
All right. Texans draft pick.
Okay,
this is the anonymous scout before the draft.
Okay.
I like the guy, but there's nothing special with the guy at all.
Okay.
Not a true edge burst athlete. Most of his production comes from that stunting stuff they do in his hustle. The run stuff is hit or miss.
Okay.
Sometimes he can get his length on guys, but he gets washed out a lot. Not great in space. Not a silky athlete with a lot of range.
Okay.
He's nowhere close to that kind of a player, comparing him to another really good player.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll leave it at that.
Okay, so this is somebody who is sounds like an edge rusher to me. Clearly not Jadeveon Clowney, because they were not saying those things about Clowney. I don't think.
Yeah. Well, there were people that were down on Clowney. Yeah, the vast majority. He was a consensus guy.
You
but,
just got a look on your face where I'm like, oh, it might be Clowney. I don't know. Boy, is it Jonathan Grenard?
No.
Okay.
It's one Will Anderson.
I was about to say it's that can't be Will Anderson, but again, yeah, Will, it's crazy to think this because Will has become such an impact player in his first two seasons. I mean, not a huge surprise. He's a third overall pick. But you're right. Like, you and I, the week before the draft, were more hot on Tyree Wilson than we were on Will Anderson.
Yeah, I got bailed out of the I having a really bad Tyree Wilson take because Tyree Wilson had more of the athletic traits, like the overall athletic traits of a defensive end.
Yeah.
But the Will, all of that stuff, I think a lot of that stuff is accurate, but that quote is just way too down on the sum total of what Will Anderson did. And a lot of it really is because of them changing the way they used him in his final year at Alabama.
Yeah.
It made it look like he wasn't as good as the year before, when in fact they just weren't letting him use all those traits.
Yeah.
So there was a Trayvon Walker comparison that I think the positive one that I found for Will Anderson. I mean, there were plenty of positives.
Yeah.
This kid's got impeccable intangibles. He might be one of the greatest kids ever. His family and everything. You want to adopt him for your son. He's an All-American kid.
That's clearly what the Texans were. They were looking at that part of Will Anderson huge. I mean, you don't give up what they gave up to go get him if the intangibles aren't off the charts, along with all the physical stuff. Yeah, and Grenard, I don't think it was a horrible guess, other than why would Bob McGinn be going and getting scouting reports on Jonathan Grenard? Grenard was a third-round pick who may have gotten overdrafted, you know?
Yeah, I think what would have been off with Grenard is Grenard was really technically sound in a lot of ways, above and beyond what a lot of when it came to reading the run and everything. I was really intrigued by Grenard, and he was coached by Todd Grantham, who was my defensive line coach at one time, and Grantham loved him.
And I was wondering, too, you mentioned long arms. That's right. I'm like, okay, I don't remember. If Grenard had long arms, he would have been a first round pick, you know.
Yeah,
and so I wasn't sure, so I just threw Grenard out there. That was fun, though. You still got a bunch of them. Can we play this again later this week?
Yeah, we can play later.
Can we play it again, Dad? Can we play it again?
Yeah.
Okay, good. That was fun. Text in Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line, if you enjoyed the little quiz show we just did. All right, the Rockets.
Or if you hated it.
Yeah, either way. If you didn't like it, let us
know. We need feedback.
We need clear feedback.
Do you prefer that segment or us going off on a character actor power ranking for 10 minutes like we did earlier in the show?
Or both. Yeah. All right, Rockets. Rockets get a win last night. The matchups that we can start to kind of see how the playoffs are coming together. There's 9 possible teams the Rockets could play in the postseason. I've got them power ranked based on how much fun they would be to play and cover that series. We'll do that coming up next. Payne and Pendergast with you. The Rockets win last night. They beat the Hawks. So a new winning streak has started, we hope. Coming off of just a disappointing loss to Denver on Sunday. They recovered nicely. No Amen Thompson last night. He was dealing with some ankle soreness, as Vanessa Richardson told us at the beginning of the broadcast. Here was Vanessa catching up with Amen Thompson earlier this week, talking about how the rest of the season could play out. And Amen Thompson saying, there is no matchup out there that scares the Houston Rockets.
How important do you think the defense that you are fostering, but also Dylan and the other guys on this team that are strong defensively, how important will that be in the playoffs in a league where defense isn't exactly always a strong point?
Yeah, I mean, you know, playoffs is when everything, you know, defense really matters, obviously. Defense wins championships. You know, we got me, Dylan, Tari, who's like the focal point defenders, but everybody out here is really bought into the defensive end. So there's no matchup I feel like I'm not confident in. You know what I mean?
That's pretty bold talk for a young player on a team that hasn't been to the playoffs in a bunch of years. But I feel.
And then he said, "I poke bears."
And Dylan Brooks looked over and was like, "Yeah. Fist bump." I do feel like, I mean, he named specifically Amen did himself and Tari and Dylan, and those are probably their best defensive players. I do feel like the guys who aren't generally considered good or elite defensive players on this team have at least bought in from an energy standpoint defensively into what Ime Udoka is saying. So I feel good about that part of it heading into the postseason for
sure. Well, if we go over the lull that they had before this recent winning streak and stretch, the fact that Udoka himself was pointing to the back-to-backs and some of the scheduling stuff, I was okay with that as an explanation, only because it was Udoka saying that. If it were some other coach, I would be railing about how these guys are soft or something. Like, Udoka is the least soft coach in the NBA.
Yeah,
he is as close to an old school coach, the guy that coached you in high school, whatever it might be, as there is. So you look at it, and it probably, you know, Udoka probably hates saying stuff like that when he, even though he feels that it's genuinely the case. I think that whatever it took, either from learning to handle adversity and learning to handle some of the tougher scheduling elements, and then facing having a softer stretch in their schedule, you're able to see much more of the good elements of the Rockets right now. You look around the power rankings in the league, and they've caught up even from last week or so, and the Rockets on a bunch of different power rankings are fourth in the league right now.
Yep.
So they're the second seed in the West. The one thing you keep in mind is, man, they haven't beat a team with a winning record in over a month.
That's
so wild. They've been playing really good and consistently their brand of basketball, but they've been doing it versus a softer stretch of schedule. So there's still a huge X factor of, all right, you give Udoka credit for knowing how to coach in the playoffs and getting the most out of his teams with what he did with the Celtics already, but all right, just how far can you go when you can't shoot the ball, no matter how scrappy you are? And just how scrappy and tenacious do you have to be on defense to overcome that?
Right.
That's the huge unknown. And I think a lot of people, like the Charles Barkleys of the world and what have you, we know with Barkley especially, not that I'm trying to pick on him or focus on him, but if it doesn't look and smell like your traditional championship caliber team, then you really tend to put it at a lower ranking. The way Barkley did with the Warriors.
Yeah.
Because, you know, jump shooting teams don't win championships.
That's right.
Yep. This is what Barkley's famous phrase was before they went on to win 17 championships.
That's right. So right
in a row, it felt like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it did feel like that. So I actually just did a little bit of recalculating while we're doing the segment here, because I remembered how the play-in worked. The Rockets are the 2 seed right now. So the season ended today. They would play the winner of the 7-8 game in the play-in. That's the way the play-in works. 7 through 10 are in a play-in. 7 plays 8, 9 plays 10, and then the loser of the 7-8 game plays the winner of the 9-10 game to get the final seed. So the Rockets would know they would play the winner of the 7-8 game, which as of the standings today would be the Clippers and the Minnesota Timberwolves. So the Rockets' pool of teams they could play in the postseason basically are 6 teams.
Yeah.
The Denver Nuggets, the Lakers, the Grizzlies, the Warriors, the Clippers, and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Seth, I've power ranked these. I'm going to rapid fire these, and you tell me as I'm rapid firing these to you if I'm off base on any of these in terms of your excitement level to play. This is based purely on excitement level, not matchups.
Okay,
this is based purely on radio friendliness, not matchups. Minnesota is the bottom of this list. They're 6th. They have Anthony Edwards, and that's cool. It would be fun to humble him, but it's Minnesota. There's not a lot of sizzle to that for me.
There's no sizzle in this matchup.
I need sizzle, yeah.
Don't disrespect me with a... Because you know the Rockets are going to get stuck with the 10 p.m. start times and everything to begin with.
Yeah.
Give me something that's sizzle-worthy, damn it.
Sizzle. Number 5, Memphis.
And
these are all fun. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
It's going to be great being back in the playoffs. It was a fun series with Ja Morant versus the Rockets.
I like the fact, though, too, that the Rockets have been very gritty versus Memphis this year. And the last one that they dropped was after they'd gotten screwed over by whatever the scheduling issue was there.
Yeah.
Just kind of plunked it down in the middle of, oh, by the way, here, this will be your 4th game in what? 7 days
it
or whatever,
crazy.
Or
yeah.
6 days on the road. So, yeah, no, I want that more maybe than the other ones.
Than the other ones?
I got it against, I don't know, I've got a long-standing, maybe it's because they're in Tennessee, my second least favorite state in the union.
That's a great point. Number 4, the Denver Nuggets. They just won the title 2 years ago. That part of it would be fun going up against Jokic, who is.
And give me all the one thing that they bring up in all these power rankings. They're like, oh, they couldn't even beat the Nuggets without Jokic on the floor.
Yeah.
No, do it with Jokic.
That's right. That's right. Number three, again, we're power ranking possible opponents based on entertainment and fun value. Number three, the Lakers are number three for me. Even with Luka there, even with LeBron, even with seven games worth of poking fun at the Bronny James dynamic, and I'll acknowledge that Bronny James has played a little better of late.
Yeah.
It sounds weird to say, but the greatest player of the last 20 years doesn't crack the top two on this list. Although a Lakers-Rockets seven-game series would be phenomenal for, I think, ticket sales and box office. Probably.
I think you're underestimating your capacity to develop a deep and unabiding hatred of J.J. Redick. So that's the one thing.
Yeah,
I need podium clips of J.J. Redick acting like the smartest guy in all of sports.
Yeah.
And explaining about how it either was or wasn't their fault, or that they got screwed, or that in the grand scheme of things, any of that. Yeah.
Would you then flip-flop my number two, which is the Golden State Warriors? Would you flip-flop the Lakers and Golden State on your list? Or would you push the Lakers, and I'll get to number one in a second, but would you push the Lakers all the way up to number one on your list?
I don't know if I'd push the Lakers up to one. The Warriors, for a team that is built on defense, there would be something just kind of gratifying. Not that Steph Curry is, you know, the same. This isn't the same Warriors team that kept the Rockets multiple times from going to a championship.
Yeah.
I would love to have them have their best defensive display and be all dialed in and firing on all cylinders versus the Warriors. I think I'd put them below the Lakers just because it's the Lakers.
Yeah, yeah. No, that makes perfect sense. And I think the Rockets beating the Warriors would be a little like the Jake Paul, Mike Tyson fight. Like, it's Mike Tyson. But it's Mike Tyson, you know, probably who takes a lot of old man medication for a lot of things and whatnot. That's what the Warriors are kind of that for me right now. Number one on this list, and I think this would just, for the circle of life aspect of this, and again, this team would need to win a play-in as of right now to see the Rockets in the, they'd need to win that 7-8 game right now to see the Rockets in the first round. But I just think with James Harden and the Clippers, the circle of life aspect of this whole rebuild starting with James Harden sitting down at a podium, fat as could be, saying that we're just not very good and it's just not really going to work out here. And for it to, especially Seth, for it to be the circle of life with the Rockets as the two seed and the Clippers, three teams removed from his time with the Rockets, mind you.
I know. He's been
in several different orphanages now, James Harden. He's been passed from home to foster home in the NBA.
Sean, I think I'm in the same boat as a lot of Rockets fans in that I've got a complicated relationship with my ex, okay? I feel like I'm like one of those couples where you're divorced, you're cordial with your ex, you've got a good relationship with the kids where you just kind of do your thing and she does her thing. And yeah, there was a lot of stuff that led to the divorce, but I can't get all hung up and caught up in that and still, you know, and still do right by my kids. That's where I am with James Harden. Okay. I don't have it in him to get vicious in a custody battle.
Yeah.
I don't want to have a viral video of me demanding that she get the kids out for my visit at this time or whatever.
Yeah.
I can't go there. I can't actively hate James Harden and forget all the good times we had.
Yeah.
Remember that time we went to Niagara Falls and we sat and, you know, and watched the falls came
we
down and it felt like it was going to be you and me forever. Yeah.
We had some good times. This is where we realized.
Sounds like you're a little bit more, but you have actually haven't gone through a divorce.
Thank you. That's what I was about to say. Yeah. This is a clear image of the two hosts. One's been in a happy marriage for it'll be three decades before we know it. And
it's a lot easier to pretend you'd be noble after a divorce if you've never been through a divorce before.
Right.
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like to think of myself as biting my tongue and being the noble one. Yes. And do right by the kids.
I hope you never have to find out. Let me first say that. And number two, I will say I have a much better relationship with my ex-wife than I do James Harden right now.
The same way you're so critical of people's parenting until you become a parenting.
Yes.
Until you become a parent, excuse me.
Yeah. All right, that was fun. Do people agree with me? Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Is James Harden and the Lakers, are they at the Clippers, are they at the top of your – are the Lakers at the top of your list, it sounds like, Seth, between LeBron and J.J. Redick especially?
Yeah.
Okay, so they're at the top of yours. Yeah.
I don't have any history. I don't have any romantic history with J.J. Redick.
No. You can just hate him from afar, and you get to maybe spoil his postseason. Either way, just reading that list of teams, like they're in a single team on there where it doesn't get me pretty pumped up about the first round of the NBA playoffs. Mm-hmm. I will say that. All right, Stephon Diggs is now a New England Patriot. He's off the market. We're going to sift through the bargain DVD bin that's left over. Are there any of these guys on the scrap heap that Nick Caserio and the Texans should be chasing? We'll get to Cam Smith making the Astros roster at the top of the hour as well. Stay there. It's interesting. You know, an hour and a half later, you can tell the people that are listening on the Odyssey app on Rewind because we're getting random texts about their opinion on the Astros taking Cam Smith. And putting the news that he was making the team, him getting that news along with his family, putting it up on social media. We'll talk about that at the top of the hour. So that'll be, we'll talk Cam Smith and the Astros. That's the big story of the day. Free agency. Stephon Diggs gets 3 years, $69 million, including $26 million guaranteed from the New England Patriots. There's not any part of that contract, Seth, and really the guaranteed money is the part, it's really the only part that matters in the whole thing. But including the guaranteed money, if it's truly $26 million guaranteed, and I know sometimes there's guaranteed for injury, there's guarantees, there's a lower guarantee for performance, whatever. Any guarantee with Stephon Diggs coming off an ACL, I view as whatever that number is, that's the
right.
Even if it's for injury, he's a guy who just got injured and had ACL surgery. I don't think any part of the numbers involved in that deal were remotely close to a neighborhood the Texans are playing in free agency this offseason.
No, and I don't think they should be before the draft, especially. That there's still a wide open possibility and scenario where the Texans draft a wide receiver in the draft. And then that at that point, even with injuries and everything that else that happens, you're pretty loaded to bring in have a Stephon Diggs plus a rookie wide receiver plus Nico Collins. Yes. Some of those guys will get injured throughout the season, but just even in getting the reps and getting the rookie ingrained and everything, it doesn't make a lot of sense to spend that big right now. So for me, Stephon Diggs, if the Texans signed him, it would have been sometime in July after he was further along in his rehab and everything else, and that at a reasonable price tag. This would have put me out of my comfort zone.
Yeah,
so
for
I'm totally cool with this.
You know what's interesting about this? I'm looking at the NFL.com best available free agents. They have the top 101. Best available free agent right now is Amari Cooper. According to them, is Amari Cooper. He was 11th on the original list. Keenan Allen is also on this list. You know, and I feel like Keenan Allen and Amari Cooper and Stephon Diggs all sort of live in the same neighborhood as far as...
They were veteran dudes that were out there and available for either trade or whatever. Yeah, all of them got traded, yeah.
All about the same age. Right, last year. Cooper during the season. And yeah, they all in their 30s. All drafted about the same time, you know, that 2015 area right there. I wonder if Keenan Allen and Amari Cooper are looking at the deal that Diggs got, and they're like, I'm going to wait even longer now. I mean, I don't think either of them are getting 3 years, $69 million.
Yeah.
But I just wonder what Diggs' contract that he got from the Patriots, if in this miniature world of veteran wide receivers that are out there, if that's viewed as a major overspend by other teams that might be kicking tires on guys like Amari Cooper or Keenan
Allen. I think they probably look at it as it's an overspend, but the Patriots are in a mode where they want to establish a culture. They want to be more competitive than they were last year. They've got the cap room to spend, so it makes sense for them.
Yeah.
If he had gone to the Commanders, I think that, even though the Commanders have already made a move at wide receiver, I think that would have made sense. I think the biggest concern I would have with Stephon Diggs up in New England is that in previous instances when he's had issues with the way he's being used, it's when he was clearly the best guy on the field and he felt, either for selfish or team reasons, he felt that he should be getting the ball more.
Yeah.
Last year, it was a much different situation for him where it wasn't him versus Gabe Davis or something. It was him. No, and Gabe Davis wasn't there in Buffalo in his final season, right?
I don't think
because he had gone to Jackson. Whatever.
I can't remember.
So it was like last year, it was very clear that there were other options. Nico Collins predominantly, but also Tank Dell. And it's a lot easier in that environment to kind of, you know, to take the noble route and know that, yeah, we got to get the whole thing going. We got to spread the ball around. It makes sense. In New England, with a young quarterback who had pass protection issues last year, just like C.J. Stroud did, it's a little harder, I think, to not demand the ball if you're Stephon Diggs. So that'll be the interesting thing to watch.
There's some interesting names still out in the marketplace. Asante Samuel Jr. is still out there. He's only 25 years old. I mean, he's not perfect, obviously. He's not a great tackler, and press coverage is a problem and things. He was a 21st-ranked wide receiver, or 21st-ranked free agent on the top 101. Aaron Rodgers, obviously, is a different story. He's 25. I'm just kind of thumbing down the list.
Well,
here.
Asante Samuel is interesting. If you start looking at the category of guys that, they're out there, they're available, they're only 25 years old.
Yep.
Because Elijah Moore, the wide receiver from Cleveland, he's another one that's intriguing, except that if Christian Kirk hadn't been traded for, I might be more really interested in Elijah Moore, but I think a lot of personnel people probably look at him as a guy that's got a lot of upside, and he's still very young. He'd be another one where I think the Texans, if they sign him, would be after the draft and if the price tag's right.
He's 25. He gets open. He's been on some really bad teams. You know, like it would be interesting. You know, if you've got a personnel department that's really good at projecting what guys who get open would look like in your system, or with a good quarterback, or with just a better offense overall, like Elijah Moore, you know, that feels like a guy, like if the Kansas City Chiefs could get him on like a 1 year, $7 million deal, I feel like he might be able to get 70 catches in Kansas City, you know?
If I were to go to the other end of the spectrum, guy who's old as dirt.
Yeah.
Calais Campbell.
I was going
to
ask you about him.
Because I like Greg Rosenthal's right up here. Because it's true. He says this may seem like a high ranking for a year-to-year guy who turns 39 in September, but Campbell is consistently one of the best players on every team he joins. I'm sick of constantly ranking him too low.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like back when I used to say, don't worry, the Spurs will get old. They're going to get – no. Next year is the year they get old. And they didn't get old. They outlived their life expectancy by like 10 years.
He feels like the player version of the thing you and I talk about sometimes. Like, you know, if you get to 58 years old without any major health issues, you're probably going to live to be 80, you know?
Right,
He feels like a guy like, you know what? He's still really performing at a high level at 35. He'll probably perform at a high level till he decides to stop playing football, you know?
Yeah, and depending on what team he goes to, as long as they're cool with him not, you know, they only want him for 10, 15, 20 snaps in a game, he can provide exactly what you want with him. And he's just got he's got this deep, gravelly voice that makes him feel like he might be 78 years old.
Yeah.
Like just a wise old grandpa sitting in a rocking chair, doling out wisdom to everybody.
Swarmy grandpa is what he is. He is a swarmy grandpa. We need a.
He's not definitely on the HOA.
We need it. That's right. We need an elderly person in that D line. Actually,
I could totally see D'Amico though being intrigued by having Calais Campbell in the room.
100%.
Especially if they draft. Okay, if they end up drafting Kenneth Grant, be on the lookout for a Calais Campbell signing.
Oh, it's like almost a Crash Davis kind of thing, huh?
Yeah. Well, think about with Will Anderson. They surrounded Will with guys in their 30s. They brought Jerry Hughes back. They signed Danico Autry. They bring Danielle Hunter in. They've got all these old heads out there who are technicians and can kind of take the young guy under their wing. So if you draft a defensive tackle in the first round, bring in a couple of elders like Calais Campbell.
Yeah,
I'm cool with that.
I'm cool with that, too. People are generally, Seth, on the Jim Adler Texas Hammer text line, generally very cool with the segment we did earlier in the hour at 8 o'clock. At 8 o'clock, Seth took old anonymous scouting reports on either current Texans or recent Texans, and I had to guess who the scouting report was about. You did a really good job of giving hints, too, I think, along the way. Text message, that was a great segment. Text message, awesome segment. Text message, that was fun. I played along as well. Okay, here's one that has a suggestion.
Okay.
That was a good segment, guys. The only thing I would say to polish... try and make it a little easier for the people in the car playing. I was getting them at the beginning, but had no idea at the end. Was really into the fact that I was able to guess some when it started. Great job, guys. Overall, I liked the segment. Yeah.
That was a little bit... I tried to structure it a little bit like they do on a lot of standardized tests where you start off easy and then they get tougher. Maybe I'll sprinkle in the. I mean, I got to throw at least a couple in that are almost impossible.
Maybe.
Otherwise, it doesn't feel. How do you identify the 1th percentile?
Yeah.
If you don't have a few in there that are impossible,
I would say maybe we'll do what we did like 5 in the segment because you and I end up talking for a little bit after each one, and I like the way you mixed in the other comments about the players we talked about too. You know, some maybe were the opposite of what.
Yeah.
That was really good. Maybe we just do it where it's like 3 or 4 that are at a normal person driving in the car level, but then there's one at the end that's like the the $64,000 question kind of thing.
Yeah, you know,
and you have to pay me $64,000 if I get it right.
Yeah. I just it sent me off into thinking about like how hard tests can be.
Yeah.
And I remember when I realized there was a whole different level of intelligence in this world that I wasn't that I wasn't ready for. My chemistry class I took in college, it was one of those weed out classes, you know, to identify the. So there would be this. It was a class of 500. I think it was one of the chemistries. I can't remember which one. It was a big class, like 500 people in it.
Yep.
And the curve for the class, you'd take these tests, and there were only like 3 tests in the entire term. And the bell curve, it would be a 125-point test. So 5 questions, each worth 25 points.
Ooh.
The bell curve looked like a normal curve from 0 through 100.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is another rise for the people that got 125 points on the test.
Yeah.
So it was just like in those words, it was like the 5th question that I remember reading the 5th question on this test. And I'm like, none of this looks familiar to me. What the hell are you even talking about? So there was like that test was designed almost to just show it, wait, like, okay, these are the superstars in this class.
Yeah, if you weren't getting 100, you were dropping that class earlier.
It looked like it was crazy. So you could, but it was very humbling.
Yeah.
Because you'd be like, you look at the first point, the first curve, and you're like, oh, I'm pretty bright. And then you look at that thing that skyrockets up to 125, I'm like, ah.
You look over the hill.
I'm just a normal Jamoke.
You get to the top of the hill and you're like, crap, it's another hill.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you make it over your first hill in the Rockies on the wagon train. You're like, you're reaching the pinnacle of the first mountain. You're like, I'll probably be able to see the Pacific on the other side.
God's like, no.
No, you didn't know Ross Blacklock was going to be a question on this test.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Boy, we'll get to this after the top. A lot of people agreeing with your take on James Harden, Seth. There are a lot of people.
Conflicted feelings
about him. Very conflicted. We'll get to that. But we'll get to Cam Smith, too. How did Cam Smith feel? How emotional was it for him, not only making the roster, but his family was in town for the news? We'll discuss that heading into the 9 o'clock hour. We'll do that coming up next.